So let's do the Rishonim. So I gave you first the Rif and the Ra'ah conjoined, and I thought that to really get what's happening in the sugya, you have to start by looking at the sugya at the beginning of the parak, which is background. So the Rif begins by quoting the Mishnah. I don't actually know whether the Rif quotes the Mishnah selectively or not. He just quotes the whole Mishnah. It's just the marker. I think so. So I think it's just, you know, it's just he's organized the digest of the Gemara. So you have to have the Mishnah as a marker. I suspect. I don't know. All right. Then, in the citation of the Gemara, he leaves out one thing. What's the thing he leaves out? In the first passage. Yeah, Chayei Shlemiut, right, which before, right, which means he leaves out the. The statement the Mekama Shervei Meir, he leaves out the whole factual claim. He leaves out the whole basis. Of Machloket. So you know, probably because there's no necessary nafkamina for that position. Or alternatively, because he thinks that is only necessary until you have the following okimtos. So we really don't know what he means by leaving that out. There are two possibilities. Either he thinks it has no nafkamina, or he thinks that it would have a nafkamina, but we paskin against it. Right, so we don't know which. Okay, then we get to our Mishnah. Okay, so we quote. So he leaves out essentially the previous two sugyot. Right, we had three consecutive sugyot addressing this issue. He leaves out the previous two sugyot. You can make of that what you will. Right, why it is that he doesn't have any of the discussion about Hanif Pasi the Chashive, why it is that he doesn't have the whole complicated discussion of the statement of Rosh Hashanah that puts the three together. We just don't know. Doesn't have it. Okay? This is what he does with our sugya, so who can tell me in one sentence? What does the Rif do in our sugya? The sugya on Mem Betrum Gim Gimel. Right. Should be possible in one sentence to summarize what he does. Okay, Yedidia, what does he do?
He excises
Abaye, that's a good start. He excises Abaye. What else?
That was one sentence already.
Maybe it has to be a compound sentence.
Intervening discussion that involves Abaye, he basically removes and reinserts the salient brachos afterwards if they apply. That whole discussion has nothing to say about
Abaye. Absolutely, right? So essentially he excises everything that's not about Rabban Gamliel directly, right? He removes the discussion and just leaves the brachos. Right? So he excises Abaye and the sum. About those brightos, he just leaves the brightos there. Okay, now there again, you have to try and figure out. So, what does that mean halachically? Does it mean that he paskins against the Abaye and every statement of Abaye? If that's true, why does he do that? Right. If he doesn't paskin like Abaye, what does he think those brightos mean now? Right, so we have a whole new range of options. So we're just trying to figure out the sugya. Right, what's going on in the sugya? But the Rif just seems to feel that whatever happened in the sugya, who cares? All that matters is we quoted the brightot, and we quoted the statement of Rav Yeshua, which seems to think he thinks that all of those are compatible. He doesn't have to choose, but he also doesn't need a bite. Okay, pretty radical. What else? Okay, that was the one sentence version. What else? We've bracketed the whole Abaye quest, the whole sugya of Abaye, and the whole Lotasuniti thing. What else does he do?
He picks from the
Ibaidemas. Right? He paskins only the Lameshani, he leaves out the Prakim, and he leaves out the Acherim Asulo. So we probably have to presume he doesn't paskin like those either. Now, this is pretty startling. We spent a lot of time on all this stuff. Right, we had three sugyot. Really, one Amora who dominated the discussion. And the two of the sugyot are gone, the sugya part of the third, the sugya part of the third sugya is gone, and the only amora we really talked about is gone. How are we supposed to understand what's left? Right, what do we what are the remaining statements mean? I guess it could be that all shamashim b'marom are aser, period. Basically everything's aser, no exceptions. Okay, good. So with that, right, what I want to start getting is realizing that what a long distance there is between reading a Gemara and coming to a halachic conclusion. Because first you have, right, you have all the possible interpretations, and then you have the possible constellations of which decisions of which positions you paskin like according to each of those interpretations. Right, not to mention that there are multiple constructions and according to which some of these opinions agree with each other and some of them don't. So what I want you to get is that it's really very hard to think of the process of Pesach as a mechanical objective process. It's really very hard because there's so many choices. And those are the choices in front of the Rif. We have many, many more choices because we have other Rishonim. So we have a vast array. Now we'll narrow it back down because we're acting as if so far as if the Shulchan Aruch never happened. And we'll have to see to what degree the Shulchan Aruch reconstrains us. Okay, so what do we have? We have a Gemara with the conversation Rabbi Gamliel happens and basically we say, look, Rabbi Gamliel couldn't have had these things because whatever Rabbi Gamliel had, that's what the Brayta of Lo Ta'asun Isi forbids. Whether it was made for him or made by him. And the answer is no. You can do it Lahavina Lahorot. Okay, we're gonna spend time on Lahavina Lahorot next week, so we're gonna bracket what that means for now. Right, then we have a set of brightot. Here what I'm interested in mostly is what the Ra'ah feels compelled to add into the sugya as the Rif cites it. So the first thing he tells you is that don't think that Chayot, Nofanim, and Srafim, and Chayot HaKodesh, and Malachi HaSharet have real forms. They don't. Right? They just look that way. They just look that way to Nevi'im. Okay, that's a philosophic position. Point again, this is not a philosophic position which is generated by this sugya. It's a philosophic position he holds despite this sugya. Because Pashup Shat in the sugya is you're not supposed to make things that look like the Chayot. Right? So he tells you, no, can't be. Okay. How did you see it?
He's just explaining what they look like. If you want to know what it looks like, look at this. It's like the ones that saw in Maranua, but not that they necessarily don't actually have them.
They told you that later, right? So just wait 6 lines later. He says, Perish, Ein la malachim v'heim chayat ha-kodesh v'ut kval.
I didn't understand the second half of that.
And the thing is, the after means kal v'chomer. Of course God doesn't have a form. Right? Okay, right. Ila ha'ilot is the cause of all causes. I'm not good on that because I always say, when I took Professor Benny Shalom's course in Maral, so it convinced me that I had no capacity to understand anything in it. He would tell this amusing story about sitting in Merkos Harav listening to another Chavruta learn Maral and get every line wrong. And then sometime later I sat in the Beit Medrash and listened to a future Rosh Hashiva teach Maharal, and he translated the word Ila always as if it said Aliyah. Ila, as if it always meant Aliyah, and that Ila means cause. And so, therefore, in fact, since that is one of the key terms in Maharal, in fact, it seems likely that he taught every single paragraph of Maharal wrong, and that there's now a wave of ignorance, of ignorant interpretation of Maharal sweeping through the Jewish world. As a result of that. So you should know that Eli is the medieval philosophic Hebrew for cause, and is unrelated to Ayin Yud Lamed Hey. Ayin Lamed Hey. But speaking of that, I should mention that I also realized when I was relearning it with Jared and yesterday that I just totally blew the context of the Shalot Yavis in terms of practicality. It should have been clear to me that it was a medal struck of Rabbi Eliezer of Broad that he was objecting to. It wasn't somebody striking a medal about himself. Right? It was, the story was that somebody in honor of Rabbi Eliezer of Broad struck a medallion to honor him, and then brought that medallion to Rabbi Yaakov Emden. You can look it back and see. I think some of you didn't even get that I had gotten it that wrong yesterday. But now I think I got. But I should say that's I only missed your hayom. I think I got it wrong. Now looking it back, that's what seems to be much more pushed shot to me. Okay. So the Ra'ah feels compelled to put in the that Chayot have no real form, I think, right, but they only appear that way. He tells you that Partsuf is a Demut Shel Balei Chayim, right? So we're going to see that we already saw in Rav Yaakov Emden that's a choice, because he's not, when he says Demut Shel Balei Chayim, he probably doesn't mean the faces or the heads of Balei Chayim. He probably means the entire form of Balei Chayim. So we don't know how he distinguishes a demut from a partsuf, from a surah, from a mazal. Among other reasons, because the Rif doesn't quote that bright this. We don't know how he distinguishes them. But he seems to think that a partsuf means the whole body. We assume that's what he means, I think. Right? Demut shel Balei Chayim, what's he adding in if he doesn't say demut shel Rashei Balei Chayim? Once you explain, you might as well explain comprehensively.
He has to limit the set.
Right. He's
saying
a living
creature, right?
Yeah. Then he should say, Tanya kol ha-pertsufot shel Balei Chayim. Why does he have to add the word demut in? I think. Okay. Not mukruch. I think he probably means whole face. He means whole body. Right. Okay. Right. Then he says, he says the same thing, right? Perish lefish and irik. Right, how does lo ta'asun et get to mean don't make human figures? Because God appears, mare nevuah kidmut mare adam, right? One of the nevuahs, right? But don't believe that, but then he tells you a general comment, malachim and chayar kodesh have no dmut, kal v'chomer, the ilaha ilot, right? The cause of all causes, right? Then we get the trick, it barach v'yitaleh, right? There v'yitaleh means goes up, right? Kal v'chomer, he has no form, and therefore, don't think that lo tasino ti, banning the human figure, is in any way making a claim of anthropomorphism. Okay, then the Rif quotes the whole story about the Kli HaMikdash, and here he says the Gemara Minin Behedya, the Kol Heichash Acharim Asuhu Muter, Kol Heichad Alekem Mishum Chshada Shelo Yechashdu Shehei Oved. Okay, so Ra'ah adds in that these prohibitions only apply if you make it yourself, and not if other people do them. And and it's not clear how broad the scope of Kol Heicha. Does it apply to everything we've learned for Partsufot, Tzurat Adam, and the Beit HaMikdash, or is this only a comment on the last Braita? But Pashut, from the next line, you'll see that it seems to mean that he thinks that what he does is, well, let's, what does he do? What is this line of the Ra'ah doing? In terms of the structure, right? If you ask in terms of his choices about the sugya, what does this line of the Ra'ah do? As he tells you. Yeah?
It accounts for the Acharim Asuhu.
He puts the line back in. Right? Charif took a line out, and he puts that line back in. Now, I don't know how he can do that as a parish on the Rif, right? The Rif left it out. So his notion, you know, it sounds like, right, if he really is a parish on the Rif, what it looks like, it sounds like he's just, little, you know, cheating just a little bit. Say the Gemara said to the parish, so why is he leaving it out? Now that is a good question, right? Why does the Rif leave the line Shana Ragam Liel Shachari Masulo? Now there is a very straightforward answer, which is that all the Balei Tosfos point out. It might be a perfectly reasonable halachic answer, but it's a rotten answer in Parshanut, right? Because all the Balei Tosfos point out immediately, so Acharim made it for him, but he ordered it, right? So at the very least, it's Amir Lakum, right? And everyone has to go through various convolutions to make that mutter. So it's possible the Rif says, you know what? If you really get something that other people made without regard to you, that would be mutter, but that wouldn't help explain Rav Gamliel's line. So he leaves it out because it's a bad shot in Rav Gamliel, not because he opposes it l'halacha. In which case, the Ra'ah can tell you that, look, the Gemara says that this is mutter, right? Even if you don't think that's a good explanation of Rav Gamliel, which is why the Gemara goes through the Ibai Seimas, because it's a bad explanation of Rav Gamliel, but it's perfectly true to Halacha. Right? So it turns out, if that's the case, then we don't need, right, we have to be very careful. We don't know, because the Rosh has two reasons for leaving stuff out. The Rif has two reasons for leaving stuff out. It can leave stuff out because he doesn't paskin that way. Right, well, three reasons. He can leave stuff out because he doesn't paskin that way. He can leave stuff out because he has no nafkamina. And he can leave stuff out because even if it's true and it has a nafkamina, it's just not shot in the text he's quoting. Right, so I'm suggesting that the Ra'ah learns the Rif as saying, of course there's a nafkamina, and of course we paskin that way, but the Rif left it out here because it's not shot in Rav Gamliel. Right, so that's a whole array of options, and the difficulty we have is that when you're talking in the Rif, right, you're basically making arguments from silence if you're trying to figure out what he meant. So we go on to say the Gemara brings me the hedges of Chol Hechash Acher Masul Mutter Chol Hechash Lekem Mishum Chshada Shlo Yechashdu Shiyehe Oved. Umishim Hachi Sharinan Kesheacherim Masul Asulo Dmut Shamashim Elyonim. Okay, and therefore, the Ra'ah is ready to paskin lahalacha that you can permit, statues lechora. Right? Nobody's made a distinction between the type of. Right? The Rif doesn't seem to distinguish, as so far as we can see. Later on, we find about belait. We don't know what the context of his belait is, but as of now, certainly paintings and maybe almost every other form, you can have angels or human figures. No difficulty whatsoever. Right? So far we're fine? Anyone have a strong position that he's only talking about certain kind of images? Not yet. Okay, good. So, Jared, why don't you tell me what the next line means?
Starting from
the underline, right, the underline section. Yeah. So what does that mean?
Specifically, they're made for decoration.
As opposed to? And what are we talking about? What kind of things have to be made for decoration, not usage? Yeah, so it seems. Mut shamashim el yonim and tzorot adam. Now, what would be a practical use of a dmut of a chayat hakodesh?
Paperweight.
So is that what we're saying, right? He says you can use, right? You can have angels, or let's say my unfortunate bottle opener, right? So you can have, it's a lion, right? And we don't have bottles like that anymore. When you had the old soda bottles, right? So you could put the soda bottle between his jaws and go like this, and the chayyim would take the top off the soda bottle. So that would be forbidden. I can leave it on my shelf, but I can't use it. Now, is he saying that I can't have things which are useful, or I can't use things? Which one?
Impossible both. Absuim Manoi makes it sound like his initial creation was for the purpose of.
So maybe you have to have both. It has to have been made purely as decoration, and it can't.
Even if it was.
Like a Vodazara. Right, you can make a vodazara. You can make a vodazara forbidden. Non-Jew can make a vodazara forbidden in two ways: either by designing something as a vodazara, by worshipping it, as long as it belongs to them. Okay, and we go on to say, Aval.
Aval kol zman shehu mishtemesh behem asur. Lo adin tzirat beit hamikdash mekelav. The same thing applies to images of things in the beit hamikdash. Tashda tiyatan asur kol shekhen shetash misham.
Yeah, so what is that? What's the Kal v'Chomer?
If you can't make it, so I'm not sure. I would imagine it going the other way. But if you can't make it, so Kol Shekhen, you can't use it.
Well, that is the Kal v'Chomer. What's the Kal v'Chomer?
Yeah, I don't know.
Alright, Rachel, what do you think the Kal v'Chomer is?
I think the Kal v'Chomer is that in the case of something to rot Beit HaMikdash, I'm not sure, but I think then you can't even use it for decoration. Kal v'Chomer, you can't use it to touch.
Can't use it for decoration. Where does it say that you can't use it for decoration? That would be a chiddush, but where does it? But he
said. I didn't see it explicitly say it, but I thought then when it says dehashta afiatan asur,
right. So what does afiatan asur mean? You can't.
Making it.
You can't make it. So where does beauty come in?
So you want to think
you can't make it even for beauty, therefore kal v'chomer you can't use it. There are a lot of terms in that equation that don't seem to stack up. But more pashut is that it sounds like I think right, more pashut is that the shamashim el yonim mitzrot adam. Well, I don't know. Let's try
it.
Like,
I'm not sure, but that you can make something that you're going to use only for decorative means.
Yeah.
But with things regarding the Beit HaMikdash and its kelim, you can not make them, and all the more so not use them.
So it would be nice, right, if we said, right, so attempting kavachomer is, so shamashim el yonim mitzrot adam, you can make for noi, but you can't use, and a Beit HaMikdash, which you can't even make, therefore kavachomer you can't use them. That would be nice, but it doesn't seem to be true either, because the whole point of this conversation is this is only taking place after acherim asulo.
Right.
Right.
The making of them.
So Tzoreh Beit HaMikdash is usur even by others. Okay, so you want to argue that by the Shamashim Elyonim, you're forbidden to make it, but other people can make it and you can't use it. So by the Tavnit Beit HaMikdash, or even other people can't make it, meaning that you can't even keep the ones that others made. Okay, that's very clever. Sharp. Let's try it again. So everyone wants to argue that the hashta siatan asur, if making them even by others is forbidden. The question that what that rests on is the claim that because it's not really a siatan that's forbidden, because we're not talking about whether it's forbidden for Gentiles. Right? It's hard to imagine we're talking about whether it's us or for the other people to make it. We're really talking about whether you can keep it if the others make it. So the question is whether you can get the phrase hashta siatan to bear the burden of saying hashta keeping things that others made.
Well, almost
the
siatan is like a code word for a siatan al-de-achir.
Well, it's not a siatan al-de-achir, it's kiyum right. I think that's very sharp. The reason I don't accept it is because I don't think Asiyatan can bear it, but it's very sharp. Right, anyway, another way of reading structurally of reading the Kal V'chomer. Yes, Yehuda.
I would say it's just saying that if you can't even make Klei Beit HaMikdash, so when it comes to Klei Beit HaMikdash, using them is what they did in the Beit HaMikdash. That's the most similar to improper worship of Hashem, if we say that's the issue. So of course you can't use them, because that's the worst. They only made them once, so they would use them in Beit HaMikdash every day.
Okay, so Yehuda is jumping to a separate stage and saying that there is no Kal V'chomer from the other Shamashim to the Beit HaMikdash. There's a Kal V'chomer within, well, the Kal V'chomer is as follows. Let's say it one more time so I don't misrepresent you.
You can't even make the Klei Beit HaMikdash.
Right.
Because it's too close to worshiping Hashem, like Amos or whatever. And of course you can't use them, which they did every day. Making them was a one-time issue.
So you want to, right, so what I think you're just saying, right, is that we should stop thinking of the Kal V'chomer as one from other Shamashim to the Klei Beit HaMikdash and use it entirely in the Beit HaMikdash. The given is that we know it's forbidden to make the Klei Beit HaMikdash. The question now is it forbidden to use the Klei Beit HaMikdash? And the answer is, well, if you can't make them, all the more so you can't use them. Right, and then we have to figure out why, right, and they're suggesting underlying rationale is that why can't you make Klei Beit HaMikdash? Because that somehow that deprives God's vessels of uniqueness. So,
building the bamot or using them?
Okay, right. Very good. Now the question asked, though, is, so what Yehuda does is he removes the Kal V'chomer, right? So now we have a transition issue. Right? When he says, V'hu hadin l'tzorat Beit HaMikdash v'kelav, right? So let's focus on the V'hu hadin, right? The same is true of. So what same thing is true of the clay Beit HaMikdash that was true of the other Shamashim? Anybody want
to
say?
That you're allowed to keep them only in such case when they're made for use rather than made for beauty. Sorry, made for beauty rather than made for use.
Okay, so you're saying exactly opposite, Miriam. Right? You're saying the way we're setting it up now is that the Tzurot Adam are, right, you may not make them, right, you may not make them, you're allowed to keep the ones that others made, but you can't even, but you can't use the ones the others made, except for Noi.
No, you can't keep the other ones that made that you're using, right? It says, Kol zman shehu mishtamesh bahem asur. It doesn't say asur lishtamesh bahem.
All right, you can't keep them.
Keep them while you're using them.
Okay, fine.
Right, but
okay.
It doesn't mean you're not allowed to use them. You might be allowed to use them if somebody else is, if there's somebody else.
You might be allowed to use them if you might be able to allow ones made by a non-Jew while they are in the possession of the non-Jew. You can't use yours. That's very good. Right.
The you're allowed to use it, right?
As long as it belongs to somebody else. That's very interesting.
Right.
That's very okay. So that's much more precise, right? Zvi wants to argue that halacha about. So wrote Shamashim El Yonim is that other people, let's assume that other people are non-Jews.
Right.
Non-Jews, if non-Jews make them, you can keep them until you use them.
Or unless
you can't make them, you can't make them, you can own ones made by other people, but not if you use them. And Yehudit suggests, and you can use ones made and owned by other people, right, as long as you don't own them.
Right.
Right. Okay, that's interesting. And then the claim is going to be the same as true of Tzurot Beit HaMikdash v'Kelav. Right, now the question then is going to be, so how do we know the same is true by Tzurot Beit HaMikdash v'Kelav? The way we know it is by this internal Kal v'Chomer in the Klei HaMikdash, because we know that it's forbidden, as a Brisa that says Lo Tasuniti. So Kal v'Chomer must be forbidden to you.
No, I mean, that could just be by the way. The Kal v'Chomer could just be by the way.
Well, the Kal v'Chomer is telling you, right, the Kal v'Chomer is how we know that it's Tashmi Shan, right? Because there's no brisa that tells you you can't use the clay Beit HaMikdash.
Right, but remember, with Tashmi Shan, we weren't necessarily also by the other thing.
Well, let's...
Right, well, I guess you have to say this way, right?
Yeah.
If you were going to make this the rationale, right, you would say, right? Asha, Asiyatana, Surkosha can't Tashmi Shan for the reason that you would have gave, essentially, right? So therefore, you're not allowed to use them, right? And if you can't use them, right, then of course you can't. Right, then there's sort of a implied other Kal v'Chomer. Of course, you can't keep them while you're using them.
No, I think that's a reasonable Kal v'Chomer. I think your reading is very, very clever, but I'm not convinced of that halacha either. But you know, it's fun that you have two really, really clever. We have two really, really clever readings that are diametrically opposed. Yes, Mr. Hitchell.
Well, I'm just wondering, the Zuhadin, is that referring to only the clause right before it, or beginning with Zalkasim? And through until
Bahamat Tor. Well, so that is it, right? So that's the question of whether you read Hashda Asiyatan. So Miriam wanted to read Hashda Asiyatan as opposed to Dafka Asim Lunoi, right? And that assumes that the Wadin only relates to the Mishtamesh Bahamat Tor. Right, and right. Whereas if you read it as a whole clause, then it's exactly the same thing. So the question I would ask now is: there's a structural question, and then there's, I guess, an earlier question. The structural question is: how deep is the Huadin accidental? Right, meaning that this is true of A, and by the way, the same thing turns out to be true of B for different reasons. Or is the Huadin setting up a conceptual equivalence? Look, A and B are the same. Or at least, the law by B is the same as the law by A for the same reason. Okay? That, right, that's the question behind it is, where does he get... So now we know how he gets this Isser of Tashmish by the Klei HaMikdash. Where does he develop the idea? And where does it come from that you can't use a Tzurat Shamashim Sheva Marom? What's his makor?
That
Kol Shacharim Asu Mutter. Does it say anything about only if you use it for beauty? Where did Dafka Asum Lenoiv Enim Ishtamesh Behem? Where does that come from? Can do that. It does, but it kind of makes the whole passage meaningless, doesn't it? Like, who cares? Why does he say Mishtamesh as opposed to Oved? The Oved Otam is a better line than Mishtamesh Behem. And who needs a Kol Shekein to tell me they're not allowed to worship the Klei HaMikdash? I mean, Kol Shekein? What is our Zasser, you know? Ah, now we want to make the word Klei HaMikdash mean different things, and the Tashmish means different things than too close.
Well, no, because how do you use an idol? You worship it. How do you use a shulchan?
Who said an idol? We're talking about how to use a picture of a malach.
Okay, but maybe the assumption is that you only would use that to worship it. That's the only
easy. What? So you eliminate the possibility that the paperweight use it to prove it doesn't mean paperweight, I guess. I don't know. That I think is pushing it. But I think I'll demonstrate that. It's next Rishon, right? That can't be. But we'll have to read that then. Okay. What I want to argue out of this is that, anyway, so this seems to be, right, again, this seems to be a presupposition that has no obvious makor in the Gemara. We could make it sharper. What does Rabbi Gamliel use his Tzirut Levanot for? Yeah?
To figure out when
the split is. So is he Mishtamesh Behem or not?
Yes.
Not just Benoit.
Well, it doesn't use the actual word.
Doesn't use Mishtamesh Behem, but it doesn't sound like he's using the decoration, he's using them practically. Right. So he uses it Lahavina Laharod, in fact. Mm-hmm. Right, so now we have to figure out whether Lahavina Laharod is a...
Well, that's not the language of the
Gemara. Gemara uses Lahavina Laharod. Yeah. Right, that's the Gemara's final answer. Right, the wrist version of it, there's Lahit Lamed, right? But that's the language, right? The Siv, Lot Lamed Lasod, Avalata, Lamed Lamed Lerot. So, Tashtis is that if we were right that the Rav was putting this line, Acherim Asulo, in the Gemara, right, then he's putting it in, and then he's rejecting it. Because the Gemara says you can put this, right, Acherim Asulo with a Heter for Rav Gamliel, but he thinks Acherim Asulo only works, right, only works if it's, if only works Lenoi, and not Lishtamesh. And Rabbi Gamliel
is
using them.
Sorry.
Right. So I find this a startling line of the that this is inserted, so far as I can tell, with no source whatsoever. Right. Yes, Didi, then Yehuda.
Well, I mean, it doesn't seem quite so startling when it becomes apparent that that's basically what happens in the Gemara, right? The Gemara says, right, Shanei Achirim Asulo, right, which appears to be, right, if it's bringing it, it seems to be bringing up it as a necessary and meaningful item in the conversation, and then it turns out that doesn't help, it turns out not to be helpful at all, because then we bring the incident with Rabbi Huda, and that actually, right, it doesn't work. So how is it significant, and yet it doesn't work? We need to find some reason that Achirim Asulo would be true in general, and not work in the case of...
Yeah, but he tells you what that is. There's
Rabbi Huda.
Chashad.
What?
The difference is Chashad.
Right.
It doesn't, right? So he's telling you that
right.
even
so
if you get rid of chashad,
right? So basically, there seems to be some sort of right. He seems to be interpreting right chashad as occurring. Right? When would chashad occur and when would chashad not occur? But there would, right, would be more likely to suspect somebody of using them for avodah zarah if they had it for use rather than if they just.
Aha. Okay. So now it is now suggesting that actually it's not that it's a criteria of chashad. And even when there's no chashad, it's asur if you're mishtamesh by them. But when is there chashad if you're mishtamesh by them? As long as you have on the wall for beauty, there's no chashad. Okay, let's go read it and see if we can do that. Okay, the Gemara means that kol hecha shachir masu muter kol hecha deleke mishum chashada shleyach shtu shehe oved u'mishum hachi sharminan kisha acher masu lo kidmut shamashim alyonim utzerot adam dafka asurim lenoi ve'em mishtamesh by them. So that is plausible in the words. That is plausible in the words. What do you guys think of that? That what he's really doing is redefining chashad and saying that the chashad deals with shimush and not with not with any other, right, it doesn't give you any other criteria for chashad. Just that noy doesn't yet, if it's decorations, there's no chashad, but objects, of but useful objects that are used, there is a chashad. Anyone feel strongly one or the other?
I think it works?
Yeah. Okay. I don't have it, right? Textually it works. I find it hard to believe.
It's a little strange, right?
Where is this true? Why don't people suspect you of worshipping things that are hanging on the wall? But I gotta admit, it works in the words. We'll have to go through the Rishonim and see if it's a plausible read. Okay. Good, that was fun. Well done, all of you. Okay. Then he puts in... okay, so now what about the... So now the deeper question asked is there a connection between the claim of the Isur Tashmish, whatever precisely that may be, by Tzurot Adam and by the Klei HaMikdash? So that's very, if you define Tashmish as an Isur of Chashad, then you can't really make that Kal V'Chomer, right? In those kinds, you can't make the Kal V'Chomer because Asiya is also D'Oraisa, L'Chora, right? The Tashmish is only also D'Rabbanan. So they make a claim that because it's Asur D'Oraisa, therefore Kal V'Chomer, it must be Asur D'Rabbanan. All right, in some other cases, because we suspect you, it's very hard.
Right, but that's a totally separate point. That just has to
right, so you have to break the Hu'adin, you have to break the conceptual connection of the Hu'adin, and say the Hu'adin is just telling me the legal outcome is that the same Isur is there, albeit for entirely different reasons, because it turns out by the Klei HaMikdash, that the Tashmish is certainly Asur D'Oraisa. Right. Alternatively, we're going to have to claim that in order to hold, take a position that even by the Beit HaMikdash, the Tashmish is Rabbanan, but somehow he makes the Kal V'Chomer. But either way, we have to break the conceptual connection, so we haven't learned anything.
It's not that Tashmish is also Mir Rabbanan, right?
Yeah.
The Yisur Rabbanan is keeping something that you happen to be using, right? And here, by the Kilim, he's actually talking about the actual Tashmish being Asur.
Well,
there's no Yisur of Tashmish that he talks about anywhere else. Right?
Well, that's
Chashad if you own something that you're using, right?
Okay, so that goes back to the question whether we find that that your other reading plausible, but Lashita Tzchah, that's
yeah.
True. Okay, yes, Yehuda.
Well, I think that the connection is actually pretty strong. Any
yeah.
way of worshipping anything, pretty much, at least almost ever, involves ritual.
Yeah.
If you're using it, that's very much strong Chashad of ritual. So it makes a lot of sense that the Chashad is using it, and same thing with Klei Beit HaMikdash. If you're using it, you're suspected of using it for some kind of ritual, which is...
Uh-huh. So we have the Gemara's reductio ad absurdum, right, which is whatever you're using it as toilet paper.
Well,
you want to answer, right, that we don't know. Take it, right? We don't know, because you have to draw a line somewhere. Okay. But you can see middle, right, we have the distinction between Kelim Mechubadim and Kelim Mevuzim, right? So you would think that we should make some kind of distinction between Tashmish Mechubad and Tashmish Mevuzah, but maybe not. All right. The alternative is to say that we derive from here that the whole Isser for all of these things is an Isser, right, is not an Isser, that the only time in which Avodah Zarah shows up in the sense of worshipping other gods is in terms of the Chashad. And what this teaches us is that, like the original, like the Shiltot, there is no issue of that at all. The only issue ever is Me'ila. Right. The only issue ever is so. Assuming there's a parallel, we just say the Klei HaMikdash of the Shamashim Shalmata, and the other things are the Shamashim Shalmala. So our whole issue is, can you either A, produce, or B, use things, right? Can you produce things which are produced, which are otherwise produced only for the service of God? The answer is no, because that deprives God's service of his uniqueness. Or alternatively...
Why can the answer be no, because
of the service? You could just say no, because of the service, and then we just go home after every sentence. We can't make any connection to anything.
Right, but I mean, the fact that we want to make a parallel between stuff in the Hirkal and stuff in the sky, I mean,
They're both shamashim. One is shamashim shalmala and one is shamashim shalmata. Again, we could break that, right? Yidid Yigalos is a way of breaking that. Saying if we take the hu adin as a conceptual connection, then the ground between those are all shamashim. Right? And they're shamashim which are forbidden, right? So what's usur about shamashim? Being mishtamesh for them. Right? And being mishtamesh, and it tells you that being well, let's put it this way. When you make a kal v'chomer, right, kal v'chomers can't exist without rationales. Right, to say this all the more so that... No, but how do I know you're not allowed to, that you're not allowed to use the things of the Beit HaMikdash? Only because I'm not allowed to make them, that's what he says.
Okay.
Now, in order for me to make a kal v'chomer, right, anything which is forbidden to make, kal v'chomer is forbidden to use, I have to know why it's forbidden to make them. Otherwise, there's no basis for the rationale. I could just say the pasuk says make them. The pasuk says don't make them. That's what the pasuk says. I can't make the whole phenomenon of the kal v'chomer, right? Unless it's a bichlal masayim mana thing, right? Where say if I can't have two of them in kal v'chomer, I can't have four of them, right? That you could make without knowing rationales. But anytime you're making a kal v'chomer from apples to oranges, right? You have to understand the reason for apples. So that's what he's doing now. He's saying, right, he's making a kal v'chomer from apples to oranges. In order to do that, he has to have a rationale. I'm suggesting is that the most likely rationale is, oh, these are shamashim, so of course, being mishtamesh is more usur than just making them. Right?
There is a connection between those two things, aside from going to any deeper reasons that, I mean, we learn them both from the same pasuk.
I can't prove it, right? There are all sorts of ways, but what I want to suggest is that the kal v'chomer tells you something about the Isser Klei HaMikdash. He couldn't make the kal v'chomer within the Klei HaMikdash unless he understood them that way. And then the Hu Adin offers the possibility that he's then telling you that the Isser of the other Shamashim is the same as the Isser of the Shamashim, the Klei HaMikdash. Right? Not demonstrable, because I'm telling you the Hu Adin could be purely technical. Right? But it's an opportunity which you can then choose to take or not. Okay. So right. So we still have to figure out, right? So we have a possible conceptual ground, but it's still pretty radical that he's willing to put in this tashmish. Although Yedidi offers us, right, this really clever way out to say that tashmish for the tzurat shalmala is only the definition of chashat. Right, so we'll have to see if that is sustainable in parallel rishonim or not. Okay. Then we say the Gemara Amrinan, the kolzman shemechaser behem mitzuratan klal. O shemeshane behem klal shari, v'chein lasotan shol prakim. U'mistaver g'she'ene mechubar chibur yafeh. So, it's nice of him to put in the mistaver, right? That's right to tell you, because mistaver tells you that he has no evidence at all, which is nice, and it's plausible, right? You know, so there we have a whole interesting question as to what you know, right? And he presumably has the Tanur Shalach Na'isogi in his head. Right, which you're talking about, right? When are things considered to be a part, and when are things considered, right? Yeah. All right, we can all understand the difference between an object that once was made of parts, but is now very hard to get apart. And right, and we can also have the whole chakira. What does chibur yafeh mean? Does it mean chibur yafeh mean things that will not come apart on their own, or things that it's very hard to take apart? All right, and this is what we call the Lego shayla on Shabbos. What constitutes genuine connection? Not our issue right now. But what interests me is the word klal. Right, why does he put the word klal in twice?
One for each phrase.
Good, I got that. So that solves the problem as to why he doesn't say kol zman shemechaser behem mitzuratan o mishana behem klal, because he doesn't believe in the distributive power of the distributive property of adjectives.
He's trying to reemphasize it because it might be controversial.
He's trying to reemphasize it might be controversial. He's trying to tell you something you wouldn't know without it, right? What wouldn't you know without it?
That chisur is actually chisur klal. Like
yes, you might think it was chisur. You might think it was chisur mashma uti, right? Okay, how does he know that this is the standard? So it could be he's just interpreting the Gemara, but that's hard because the only Gemara has two things. One is take it apart into pieces. That's not so klal, and the other is blind its eye. Right. So, I think based on the Gemara, it's very hard to get the idea that klal is a that klal is the standard.
Where is that in the Gemara?
The end of the Gemara, when he's walking with the side story of Yehuda, when he's walking, he finds something and he says Shinina Same, and he's done. Did I not give you that Gemara? I did. Yeah, Sami Enidi Dan, right? He tells Rabbi Yehuda is walking with him, and he's holding what is it? So that's the only standard we have for Shinui is Pachit Turato or Sami Enidi Dan, right? So we don't have the he turns this into Kol Zman Shemachaser Behem Turatan Klal O Mishaneh Behem Klal or by the way Lasto Tan Shel Prakim, so long as it's not really well put together. And so what I want to suggest is that he has a question, and the question is what is the question is what standard do we make for shinui, and he makes a choice, and the choice he makes is the minimal standard. Now where does he get that choice from? I'm contending not from Pshat in the Gemara, which means he must have a conceptual basis. Right? And the most likely conceptual basis is that he understands the prohibition as making things exactly like.
The other option is that he gets it. I mean, the fact that he connects Prakim to it, he didn't have to.
Yeah.
Right? Other people assume Prakim is only negating the problem of Pshat. Right? He connects the problem of right, Prakim to the part of the Gemara that's changing it. Right? If you have something of Prakim, right, it looks virtually the same. Right, if not entirely the same, but it's not the same because it's made of Prakim.
Yes.
Right. So it may be that because he reads Prakim that way, that's where he gets it from.
So he reads Prakim as looking exactly the same. So how does
the fact that he thinks Prakim is a question of machinery, not a question of Pshat.
Yeah.
Prakim is getting to the heart of the issue. Right? So Prakim doesn't actually change the essence of it.
Right.
He did Mistaber.
Yeah.
That if it's Chibur Yafa, now why would that be the case? Because right, if it's Chibur Yafa, it will look exactly the same.
It will look exactly the same. Okay.
Right. If you let's say it's, you know, it's two pieces, right? You know, I don't know. It has, you know, what we would have like a head that just attaches inside.
Right.
Right. So then, right, if it's right Yafa, right, it's Chibur Yafa, right? You will not be able to tell the difference at all.
So you think he would ban a poorly constructed object that was where the seams were invisible, but permit a badly constructed object in which the seams were visible. Sorry, but he would all he really cares about in terms of prakim is the visibility and not the nature of the construction.
I'm not sure, but that may be where he's getting it from.
Okay, you're also assuming I'll do what he did on you, right? So he was about to tell you, right, if he had thought about it. That how do you know that he thinks the mechaser and mitzvah town klal deals with yoreisa? Maybe those are just ways of getting rid of chashad too. You're assuming that Lifrakim is being read into the others as opposed to the others being read into Lifrakim, and we don't know which one that is. I think it's a plausible reading, but I don't know for sure. But I think that, right, I guess the underlying point of your question is, I understand what Mishaneh Behem Yitzurah Tan Klal means, it makes it non-identical. I understand what Mishaneh Behem Klal means, it makes it non-identical. What does Prakim do? It's still identical. Right? And then...
But it's not the same.
But it's not the same. So then, right, so now... The procedural thing here is, right, so what I want to try and show methodologically is that what really matters about Rishonim is when they make changes that are not motivated by the text, because that tells you what they really care about. Right? Those are the things that the text can't affect. So what you have, right, so the two changes he makes are, right, when it comes to any change other than being made of pieces, he lowers the standard to the bottom. When it comes to to being made of pieces, he raises the standard. And he says, right, even made of pieces isn't good enough, right, if you put the pieces together well. Right? So you get out of the Ra'ah is that he has a vision of what this standard ought to be.
We can't see those things as the same. Given that he introduces the first thing by Ibu Gamara Amina, the second thing by Yitzhak, we can't see them the same way.
Well, one place he's claiming, right, I don't I don't know. I think he's telling you the first one he told you, he can just read it to the Gemara. The second one he has to add something the Gemara doesn't mention. But they're both, neither of them is driven by the Gemara, I don't think. I don't think. I mean, you could disagree with me. You can think that you read the Gemara and it's obvious that it's Klal. I don't think he could have said that. I think he's making a choice. But you're right, the rhetoric is different. All right, so we're trying to figure out what significance we give the rhetoric.